Special guest in the second hour today, Cindy Cash Dollar. Cindy's just released a brand new album. The label is Silver Shot. The name of the album is Waltz for Abilene. Always been a fan of Cindy's music. You might be more familiar with her with the very, very successful Asleep at the Wheel band. She's from the Woodstock area of New York. She's back there now. Cindy knows a lot about bluegrass, played a lot of bluegrass in her younger years, so you're going to hear her talk about that. Also, some really relevant, sadly relevant information about the coronavirus, including Larry Campbell, who's on this Waltz for Abilene album on the very final cut. Also, Ray Benson, her former band leader, has a little bit of the coronavirus. We're going to talk in detail with Cindy about the album. 4.5 years in the making, it was worth it. I enjoyed this so much. Thanks, Cindy. There, the cut you just heard is brand new from Cindy Cash Dollar's album Waltz for Abilene. What you heard was a pretty familiar tune, different take on Foggy Mountain Rock. The album is released on Silver Shot Records. I'm so happy to have for the very first time on Unreal Bluegrass, Cindy Cash Dollar. How are you, Cindy?
I'm good. I'm fine, thank you, considering these challenging times.
Oh, gosh.
How are you doing?
I'm doing fine.
How are you doing?
We've there's so much going on, Cindy. I'm going to talk about some of these things as we get closer and deeper into the album. There's a couple issues that relate directly to this coronavirus, COVID-19. We'll talk about those. And toward the end, if we have a minute, I want to talk a little bit with you, your experience with what's happening with music and musicians as a result of what's essentially a lockdown on the country and groups and everything. But I love this album, Waltz for Abilene. You must have picked, I assume you have more favorites, but I get the feeling of all the people you've got on this with Albert Lee and Roy Block and Sonny Landreth and Ray Benson, Marsha Ball, Amy Helms, you must have just cherry-picked some of your favorite people to have on a project like this.
Well, fortunately, they're all good friends, and they're all people who I have toured with, recorded with, worked with extensively enough that I was so familiar with their style of music, and as I said, you know, some I had toured with before, and so it really seemed almost like at times a conversation with old friends. You know, how music is, to me, it's like similar to speaking with people, only you're speaking musically.
Yeah.
And if you know the person well, you have quite a conversation.
Yeah.
So that's what it kind of felt like to me. But certainly if I could have cherry-picked, I'm sure a lot of the same people would have been on there because they're just people that I've admired, you know, for as well as revered. So it was really a joy to be able to record in that fashion.
How, let me ask you, Cindy. I'm going to talk. Cindy Cash Dollar, Asleep at the Wheel. Probably most people would recognize you from that multi-award winning, very successful. We'll call it Texas Swing, I guess, as the general blanket over it. But all kinds of music, great music came out of Asleep at the Wheel. We'll talk about that a little bit. We're going to talk about the album in as much detail as we can both stand, because I get a little picky sometimes. But I know you're in the Woodstock area now, up in upstate New York, correct?
Yes, I grew up here, and the Cash Dollar family is one of a few very old original families from this area. And I moved away in 92. I moved to Nashville and then to Austin, Texas, but I came back here to Woodstock, New York about 5 years ago.
And you, back in the day, you would play with, and we talked a little bit off the air just so the listener knows as I'm talking to Cindy, made some connections for that part of the country and names that I could associate with Cindy. Early on, you played with a musician that I met a few years ago by the name of Brian Hollander, and there's a lot of different names associated, but I think that might have been your formative times as being a band member.
Yes, Brian and I were in a bluegrass band here. He's a great picker and artist. And before Brian, I toured with John Harold, who some of your listeners may know from way back, the Greenbrier Boys.
Oh, gosh.
With Bob Gillen and Ralph Rinsler. And And so when I started out playing, yes, here it was, even though I had started out on guitar at a very young age and played folk music and then country blues, when I finally took up dobro some years later, I was deeply meshed into bluegrass.
Well, and that's what you did for a while. And dobro then translates over to the steel, the pedal. I mean, all kinds of music that you play on this and different instruments. You know, a lot of slide involved, not always, but I think that comes from maybe your beginnings in the dobro and that whole slide kind of sound. I think that relates to what you were doing. Yeah.
Yes, it just I always say the instruments just kept getting heavier, either with gear or more necks. It kind of went from dobro to lap steel to the double neck steel guitar to a triple neck steel guitar
and more pedals.
The evolution of more pedals, more amps, heavier amps. Oh yeah.
It was also simple when you started, and it just became more and more enmeshed and more.
It just kept growing. It's like my mother still says to me, why couldn't you have just taken up harmonica? She always likes to laugh and say that.
Well, a good reason, and you could have and maybe you do, but we'll talk a little bit later about maybe a good reason why you didn't is because John Sebastian plays a heck of a harmonica on one of the cuts of this train. So we'll leave that before we get to it. But that could be one reason why a lot of people don't want to because John is so good at that.
He's amazing.
He is amazing. We talked a little bit about, I don't want just because I opened with Foggy Mountain Rock, I don't want to short shrift Albert Lee and your effort on that tune. If you want to speak a little bit about that, then we're going to talk about Roy Block, one of my all-time favorite acoustic slide players.
Well, sure. Well, Foggy Mountain Rock, written by Josh Graves, who was one of my early influences when I started playing dobro, because my dobro teacher was a huge Josh Graves fan. And, I was, at the time, learning, I was hearing, various dobro players and stylings, but it was obvious that Josh really, he really turned a few pages in the history of styling with dobro because, he just flatted the sevenths and thirds and made it so bluesy. And, when he played with Flatt and Scruggs, such a great backup people to back you up. But he just shone on that instrument, and I was very taken with his style. And so I thought Foggy Mountain Rock would be perfect to play with Albert Lee. And I play lap steel on it. And, there's a few more instruments than an acoustic bluegrass band. But I had been on the road with Albert. We were touring pretty extensively. And we had played 9 shows in a row. We had a day off. And there happened to be a studio next to the venue that we were had worked out the night before, and I just thought, wow, let's just record this. It'd be so much fun to do this for the album. And so there you have it.
Let me ask you this now. This brings up my next question: how long was this album in the process? If you're doing a cut with Albert Lee when you're at the end of a touring date or near a studio, how long did you take to put this album together? Were you doing it like that in one at a time, or?
Well, it was pretty much whenever opportunity could present itself. It was either in that instance where I was touring with somebody in their band, or flying to various places to catch people when they were off the road. And so all total, with a bad car accident in between that kind of set me back for a while, the making of Waltz for Abilene took 4.5 years.
Okay. So, what would be, let's say, the oldest date of recording on this album? If we went back to the very first one, which was the beginning of the process, it wasn't the one with Albert Lee, was it?
No, the beginning of the process. I was still in Austin, Texas, and a good friend of mine said, I know you're going to come back here after you move away, but you should really, while you're here, right before you move, just get a bunch of your friends and record a couple of songs. And so that's what I did. So I think, I was in the process of packing boxes and lining up a moving truck and doing some tracks. So I think the first track I recorded was, it was How Many More Years with Omar Kent Dykes,
yeah.
Who had Omar and the Howlers for quite a while, and then Peacock Alley with Ray Benson and Derek O'Brien on guitars and Mike Flanagan on Hammond B3 and Marsha Ball's drummer Corey Keller on drums and Sarah Braille on bass. So yeah, those were the first two. And then Salvation as well was recorded in Texas.
And that's is that just you and Marsha Ball, basically? I mean, as far as the...
No, that is with part of a band that I worked with for many years, Johnny Nicholas and Hellbent. So that would be John Shipman on drums, Scrappy Judd Newcomb on guitar, who some of your listeners might know from his work with Suede Cleese.
Oh, sure.
And Bruce Hughes on stand-up bass. And, of course, the amazing Marsha Ball on piano.
There's several instrumentals. We can talk about those as we go. We've touched on a few of them. Peacock Alley, which we're going to get into, and I'm going to let you introduce it for the listeners. But there's a lot of a couple of almost spiritual gospel-y kind of tunes on here, and I include in that Salvation, of course, the one we just talked about with Marsha Ball. But later on, there's Ring Them Bells, which you have Amy Helms, I think, on.
Ring Them Bells, that's right, Amy Helms.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So you kind of cover a lot.
Amy chose that song by Bob Dylan. But yeah, there's a whole spectrum of music on there.
And Amy, for the listeners, if you just tuned in, I'm talking to Cindy Cashdollar, I want to remind people of that. But Amy Helms, daughter of, everybody knows Levon.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and that reminds me so much of her dad. Personally and musically, and she's a heck of a drummer too. And I toured with Amy for a couple of years, and a couple of times she got on. She is just, like I said, so much like Levon, just her conviction and her soul with music. So it was such a pleasure to have to get to record with her too.
When did you first start working with Amy? When was the first project you had with Amy? Have you recorded with her before or helped her on her albums? Or just, if you can think about the first time you actually got together with Amy musically.
Okay, good, because sometimes it's hard to actually pinpoint the exact year, but I remember the first time recording with Amy very well, because Levon was still alive, and for Amy's 21st birthday, he rounded up a recording session for her. She'd never been in the studio before. And so it was myself and Levon and Rick Danko. And I think Jimmy Weider was on guitar. And Amy had learned, I think, one or two songs on the way to the studio. And we had such a good time recording. And I still have the CD. Somebody had burned a CD of that, and it was filmed, actually. And so that was the first time I recorded with Amy.
Well, that must be, I bet it's on YouTube if it's been filmed by now, don't you think?
No, it was never released.
Oh, not even released for that, okay.
There was quite extensive footage of it. I think someday that something will be done. Because it's really great. It is just so sweet. Seeing Amy at that age and first time in the studio, and you know, there's a scene of Levon just kind of teaching everyone, you know, a chorus to a song, and so that recording session, yes, is deeply ingrained in my brain.
I've kind of skipped around a little bit as far as the topics and some of the issues that are on the album, which is Waltz for Abilene on Silvershot. But I don't want to skip Roy Block. Roy Block, I've been a fan of hers for a long, long time, and you have her on the second cut on this album, Waltz for Abilene.
Yes, we did a song by the Reverend Robert Wilkins called That Ain't No Way For Me To Get Along, and I've always been such a huge fan of Rory's vocals as well as her playing style, and long ago, before I even took up playing anything slide, I took a couple of guitar lessons from Rory.
Oh, did you?
So that goes so way back. So that's how long I've been a fan of hers. And years and decades later, we were at a festival, and someone put us together on a workshop, and we didn't know what we were going to do. We just did something off the cuff, and then we had so much fun, we decided that we should actually maybe do some shows together. So occasionally that's what we do. We have a duo called Sisters of Slide, and it's great fun to play with Rory, but I so much wanted to have her singing and playing on this project, and it's so much fun because when you hear the track, you can hear us. You know, she's panned on one side, and I'm panned on the other. So you can hear us going back and forth playing slide, and it's just so much fun. I still get a kick out of hearing it.
And she is so. If you've ever seen her live and talked to the audience, you have. She's so 100% into every note and making sure. And I do say this: she has such a clean. For people who, you know, sometimes you think, hey, I can slide around, but to be clean and to be precise, it's hard to do that with an acoustic slide guitar, and I think she's about as good as I've seen that just nails the whole end of that whole acoustic blues, and with a slide, it's just, it's not easy. I guess that's what I'm trying to, and she makes it look
it's
really
not,
simple.
And she does think it's down and look easy, and you know, I'm playing, you know, slide in my lap, and she's playing bottleneck style on her beautiful acoustic Martin guitar. But her she is such a historian of this music as
That's
well.
Right. Yeah.
In these country blues styles.
Oh,
and it all just comes out. And she's a wonderful performer, a wonderful historian, and she has a new album out too, and for the listeners out there who are not familiar, I think you would all enjoy Rory Black.
I do too. And then we get into two instrumentals on the album, if I'm looking correctly. Seychelles, which is Sonny Landreth, and then Skylark, which has Jake Langley, who you're going to tell me who he is, I don't know. But those are two instrumentals that follow this cut with Rory Black, and then we're going to get into Peacock Alley. I'm going to let you introduce that. But talk a little bit about Seychelles and also Skylark, which is just stunning, just a stunning recording of an old Mercer Carmichael tune.
Thank you. Seychelles is a traditional song, and Sonny Landreth, who's a very old friend and a fellow tourmate, we had been on tour together with Beausoleil, with the Cajun group Beausoleil.
Yeah.
They were celebrating their 25th anniversary with a big tour, a lot of different guests. Nick Forrester from E-Town was on the tour, a lot of guests. And so we would play Seychelles every night, and Beausoleil would play it at a, you know, of course, faster pace. But I love the melody so much, I wanted to slow it down a little bit. And so I was lucky to catch Sonny off the road. I was on tour, actually, with someone. I was on the West Coast, and I had 2 days off. So I flew to Louisiana to record with Sonny, and then flew back to the West Coast and rejoined the tour, just to give you a little hint of how this putting the pieces together of this project was.
That's amazing.
But we recorded in Lafayette, Louisiana, and Sonny was on electric guitar and playing as only Sonny can. He is such an incredible style, individual with his style.
Yeah.
I've never heard anybody play like that.
He's not one of the names that I didn't know. I know Sonny's music pretty well, so I'm thrilled the way you discussed this interaction with both of you.
Yeah, I'm sure. And, you know, maybe listeners maybe don't know right away, but I know they've heard him early on with early John Hiatt recordings.
Yeah.
But Sonny was on electric, and I played a metal body baritone tricone guitar, and that was really the tonalities of those two instruments are very nice. But just what I tried to do a lot on this album, not necessarily every guest is a slide player, but in doing so, I think it's important just to have a difference in tone, certainly when you're doing that. That's what I was doing, and we recorded Seychelles with Sonny's, his drummer and the local and bass player people he's been playing with for a long time. I'm very happy.
That's great. That's beautiful. And just so the listeners know, you play a lot of different string instruments under this bigger, this bigger umbrella of slide type. But do you, offhand, do you know how many different instruments you play on this album?
Oh, wow. That's a good
Well, I should have counted them. We'll say more than a few.
Yeah, more than a few. I'm trying to add them up. I mean, you know, there might have been like two kinds of one instrument, but
okay.
I would say at least six different.
Okay.
At least off the top of my
head.
Six different styles of slide guitar and different tunings and it's the big umbrella.
Started with a dobro, one simple little instrument. Wasn't a harmonica, but you started with a dobro, and look at where you are now. I keep coming back to the Skylark. We talked a little bit before we went on the air. Your version of Skylark, and the first name I do not know is Jake Langley, but this is a gorgeous version, and I want you to tell the audience a little bit about not only how you recorded the song as you've been doing as we go through them, but Jake Langley I do not know.
Jake Langley is an incredible jazz guitarist, swing guitarist from Canada, from Toronto, that moved to Austin, Texas, when I was still there. And I met him, and, you know, I think we had a jam session and loved each other's playing. And we started a group called the Bordertown Bootleggers. And the Bordertown Bootleggers, we have a CD, and it's a really fun CD of swing and jazz. So we used to play once a week when we were both off the road in town. And this is just one of the songs on the CD that I really wanted to do. And it's such a gorgeous, you know, the old Johnny Mercer, Hoagy Carmichael tunes. The melodies are just so luscious to me. And so... We did this with Floyd Domino on piano, who of course was asleep at the wheel for many years, and Merle Haggard and a lot of players, and Danny Levin on cello and fiddle, and Willie Nelson's most recent stand-up bass player Kevin Smith, and Rob Cazanell on drums. But it's such a I'm very pleased with the way that.
Oh wow! And the cello parts are just perfect. Just the perfect spot and the perfect feel.
I love cello. It's like, and I tried to play it some years ago and just could not do it. And I thought, well, it's another fretless instrument.
Yeah, why not?
And but it was a total bust. You know, I could not do it. But I love it.
At least you tried it.
I did try. It was a noble attempt.
It's a really breathtaking. I mean, it's just wow. Of all the great recordings of Skylark, this is in my top handful at this point. But there's so many great, so many different genres of music take on Skylark. I mean, it's so pervasive, and it's a jazz standard. I mean, jeepers criminy, of all the jazz musicians that have recorded Skylark in the country, and just goes on and on, but it still works. This is a great, really great version. I want you then, Cindy, if we're done with Skylark, you can talk more about it if you want to.
I'm just glad you said that about the version of it, because it's interesting. There was a recent review where the reviewer said, you know, one song I never thought I would really want to hear again is Skylark. There's so many people have done
well,
it,
true.
But he loved it.
That's
he
true.
Loved the version, and so I'm glad. I mean, you know, I think it's one of those songs, one of the melodies that it just proves that you can, no matter what instrument you play, I truly believe that you can really take any melody and play it. A gorgeous, simple melody, you know, is not constrained by the instrument, you know, or how it might have been originally done. I think it lends itself to so many things, and it really is amazing how far, you know, steel guitar, lap steel, you know, I recorded that track on lap steel, have come from just being pigeonholed to either just strictly blues instruments or strictly country and western instruments. So, you know, that's what I like to do, is take the unexpected and kind of make it my own, really.
You did that a lot. Now I want you to talk about the next cut, which is back more to that Austin, that Sleep at the Wheel sound with Peacock Valley. I want to talk about Peacock Alley. I cannot read my handwriting. It's like a V, which makes no sense. Peacock Alley. I want you to talk a little bit about that, and then we're going to play it for the listeners, and then we'll come back and talk to you some more.
Peacock Alley is an instrumental by Bill Doggett. Bill Doggett, D-O-G-G-E-T-T, who is a very famous saxophone player. And that song came about. There's a famous blues club in Austin called Antones, and a wonderful guitar player, Derek O'Brien, would share the Monday night blues time there. And you know, so when I would come and sit in, I would bring my my steel guitar, and one night he just said, "Do you know this song, Peacock Alley?" "No, never heard of it." "Well, here's the hook, here's the melody hook, and you know, 5 minutes of that at sound check, and well, let's just try it tonight." And we had so much fun doing it at a lot of those Monday night blues nights at Antone's that I just decided, well, why not just have him and the blues, you know, the people from that band just in the studio and record it. And I really also wanted to get Ray Benson, you know, my boss and ex-boss and dear pal from Asleep at the Wheel on guitar, and Mike Flanagan, who's a well-known Hammond B3 player.
Great, powerful organ. Powerful organ sounds.
So that's how Peacock Alley came about.
Well, let's then play Peacock Alley. I'll come back and talk to Cindy Cash Dollar.
Oh, and it's the only track on the album where it just somehow wasn't done on purpose, but it's the only track where I'm playing steel guitar. And I just thought the steel guitar and Hammond B3 is a lot of fun too together.
I agree with you. We'll listen to Peacock Alley. I'll come back and talk to Cindy Cash Dollar. What we're talking about is her new album, Waltz for Abilene on Silvershot. So give a listen to this tune as Cindy just introduced it and explained it, and we'll come back and talk some more. All right, there you just heard Peacock Alley, introduced by Cindy Cash Dollar so well, my guest today on Unreal Bluegrass. It's everything you said it was. I get the whole feel. And Ray Benson, well, we talked a little bit off the air about Ray having, we're in the midst of this coronavirus shutdown, and I think it was recently announced that Ray had been suffering from a little bit.
Yes, I was so sad to hear that, but I had some communication with him by text a few days ago, and he said he's doing better, and I'm so happy. And it took a while, you know. He said it seems like they tested him for everything, but. It just seems like, you know, his wishes were that he would have been tested earlier, it would have been caught earlier.
Mm-hmm.
But thankfully, he's out of the woods, so to speak. And I'm so glad that he is.
Everybody is. And this is, by the way, we're speaking, Cindy, we're speaking the day after John Prine died.
Oh, that was a blow.
Jeez. That's impossible to explain the impact of that.
It's impossible. I just happened to see it last night and was really taken aback. For a minute, I didn't think it was true because, you know, he's fought major health battles with cancer and come out fine. And to be felled by this was just... Yeah. It was almost too much news to bear. It really was.
I agree with you. And then we come to another name on this album that I do not know, Omar Kent Dykes. And that's the next tune up after Peacock Valley is How Many More Years. I want you to tell me who that is because I don't know.
Omar Kent Dykes is just one of my favorite blues singers out of Austin. And for many years he had a band called Omar and the Howlers. And Omar and the Howlers, they toured in the United States and Europe. And I just, you know, he was another one of the people that would come to the blues nights at Antone's on Monday nights and sit in. And I just thought, got to have Omar. And so he just came in, and we didn't even know what song we were going to do. And he just went in the studio and plugged his guitar in and started singing How Many More Years. And we just started playing. That's what came out.
He's got a great voice and a great player. So I mean, I'm glad to get to know him through this album.
Oh, he's just wonderful. And if you listen carefully at the very tail end after the song stops, you can hear him cackle. It was so much fun. I think we did that song in one take.
Oh.
And he was joyous. And the way we just had fun playing it, so you can hear him laugh.
We touched a little bit on Salvation with Marsha Ball just a little bit earlier, and how that came about, and that is, you know, like I mentioned earlier, there's kind of like a, some couple spiritual uplifting. Ring Them Bells, Salvation, you know, any of them could be, but those two kind of strike me in that vein a little bit. And it's great. Marcia Ball's wonderful. Again, you have so many great people on your album, Cindy. You should be happy.
Oh, I'm very happy. It's just like a wonderful gathering of friends, really. You know, it took a while to gather, but that's what it, you know, it feels like in the process of, and now, you know, the listening, so many of those recording sessions were just, you know, great, you know, just great to envision again. But, you know, living in Austin, Texas, and Marcia Ball does too. I've known her for many years, recorded on a couple of her albums. And Salvation is a song I wrote strictly because I just, you know, I love the Campbell Brothers. I love the sound of Sacred Steel, which is a whole other sect of
I've actually met them and interviewed them, believe it or not. They're amazing. They're just amazing.
Yes, they are. And I just love that whole style. And, you know, the fact I've been a fan of Sacred Steel for so many years. I still have the original little cassette that came in a little packet that you could order from the Chamber of Commerce down there in Florida where it kind of started. And so that's how long I've been.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's longer than me.
And so I just wrote Salvation for no other reason than I just, you know, I'm not saying that I play that style on this track, but I just wanted something gospel-y to do with Marcia Ball. And we had a band in Austin for a time called Texas Guitar Women, with Carolyn Wonderland and Rosie Flores and Sue Foley and Lisa Pankratz, Sarah Brown, and, you know, Shelley King. And so that was one of the songs that towards the, you know, the more recent gigs when I was living in Austin, we would do that song. And so I wanted Marcia on that cut because her style of piano, you know, of course, no matter what she does, I know she's known for her kind of New Orleans boogie-woogie style. But in doing these shows with her, I just heard what she did slowly and just equally as amazing. So that's why she's on that track.
The next, it's great, and the next tune is a name that I know, Arlen Roth, and I told you off the air why I know of his playing is that many, 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 many years ago, I purchased a book to learn how to play slide blues, and it's Arlen Roth book, and I looked it up to make sure before we started today, and you have Arlen Roth on the next, it's an instrumental in the heart of this town.
Yeah, Arlen wrote that, and I'll play with Arlen and his band, because I'm in Woodstock, New York, and he's just a little ways, a couple of counties over. And I was such a fan of that, of his playing in that song. There's just something about it that kind of evokes kind of like a film noir soundtrack almost. It's a, kind of another luscious sounding song to me. And so he played in the studio. He played electric and acoustic guitar. And I double-tracked myself with a steel guitar and lap steel just to give it a more lush sound. And I had my brother, Russ Castro, on drums, and Brandon Morrison on bass. And that was one of the later tracks to be recorded. But I think it's a very... Arlen writes some very beautiful instrumentals, and that's one of them. That's what I'll say about that.
He's the... And pardon my flashback, but I just had an image of the cover of that book that I was talking about, a tutorial kind of book for slide and blues. It's like a drawing, and this is one from memory, it's like a drawing of what I would expect Howlin' Wolf. It doesn't say it's Howlin' Wolf, but it kind of looks like Howlin' Wolf a little bit on the front. And why that occurred to me now while you were talking, describing him, I don't know, but it's just, Arlen Roth was one of those names. I saw this and I thought, I can't wait to hear him play with Cindy, and I was not disappointed at all, so... That was a great choice. And I know you're in Woodstock, where everybody is. I know that. Everybody's there. All the great players are there. There's like this vortex of all these great musicians and friends that I have that are still up there.
Yeah, it is. It's a great town to grow up in. It's always been a town that's been attracted artists of all kinds. And, it was quite a soundscape to grow up in. And a lot of those people are still here. And that's a wonderful thing.
We know John Sebastian's there. We're going to talk about him in a minute. But and we've talked about Ring Them Bells a little bit with Amy Helms. I want to get then, because we have discussed Amy in that recording. But Oh Susanna is just you, correct?
That's correct.
And that's a song that maybe someone wouldn't have expected to select.
I think Stephen Foster, to me, he's like the original writer of Americana. You know, I mean, we're talking over 100 years ago, and even though Oh Susanna is obviously another example of a song that's been done and done by so many different people, but I love Stephen Foster's melody, or Stephen Foster. And so I've heard it pronounced both ways, but I think Oh Susanna is just a lovely song, and it's the only track on the album that I play by myself, and I usually do not play by myself. I'm a side person, always have been, always happy to do so. it was really kind of a change to step out and record something by myself. I will do it at shows sometimes when I play with Rory Block, as earlier mentioned. We have a duo called Sisters of Slide, and we each step out during that during our concerts, and we'll do a couple of songs solo, and that's one I've been doing. And so I thought, well, I'll be brave and record it myself. And the engineer, actually David Cook, pretty much championed me doing a solo piece. So
it works out very well. I will tell you this: in Kentucky, we call him Stephen Foster.
Thank you.
Well, and maybe when they cross, you know, he was in Kentucky, he went to Pennsylvania. I know he died penniless, which is unbelievable, but he spent a lot of time, I think, in Pennsylvania. Maybe up there he was Stephen, in Kentucky he was Stephen. That's just the way it works out.
Well, I'm glad, because it's like when I moved to Texas and I said the word P-E-C-A-N, as in P-E-C-A-N pie, right?
Yeah.
Coming from here, it was pecan.
Yep, I know.
Well, I quickly got corrected. Pecan?
Yep.
Pecan.
Yeah, and they'll tell you what a pecan is if you really want to know.
Oh, they did.
I know.
And I never said pecan again.
No, you don't.
I correct people here. I moved back here in the Northeast, and I correct people.
Well, once they tell you the difference, it gets pretty obvious.
Very obvious, and you'll never forget it.
Nope, not at all.
As I will with your pronunciation.
Yeah, leads to one of my all-time favorite artists. In this cut, I play over and over and over. I'm talking about John Sebastian on This Train. It's just a nice big, what I would call a big, fat, fuzzy guitar sound you're playing. And then John Sebastian, who, for the people who don't know, tell a little bit about his skill on her. Sure, Love and Spoonful, yes, that's great songs, great melodies. He's a great guitar player. But this song really displays, I think, the real talent that he has playing harmonicas. It's fantastic.
Yeah, he's, you know, his father was, John's father was a concert player on harmonica, and you know, it's an instrument that John obviously, you know, played most of his whole life, in addition to guitar. And I know a lot of people, I know that the instant association with John Sebastian might be, you know, What a Day for a Daydream with a Love and Spoonful, Darling Be Home Soon, and the theme song for Welcome Back, Connor, and so many things. But he played harmonica on the Doors Roadhouse Blues.
That's right.
And so in doing This Train, which is another traditional song that I've heard many ways, Sister Rosetta Tharpe and Woody Guthrie, Mavis Staples, but I took that song and took it out of a major key and put it in more of a minor blues key styling. And yes, I'm playing lap steel on there, and I wanted John Sebastian on a song, and I just thought, wow, John, harmonica, perfect.
If people listen to it with about 2 minutes and 30 seconds to go, John just explodes. That's where it's just gorgeous guitar, and then like two minutes, 30 seconds or so into it, there's the guy that played for the Doors. This is not the guy that said, go home and make up your mind. This is the harmonica player who has great skill.
He just nailed it. he nailed it so quickly, and it's just like it's almost like that piece was just waiting for him to play on. You know, that's how I felt about it.
And I know John is another one of your neighbors. You just walk down the street and talk to John Sebastian. Hey, you want to make a record? I know Woodstock. It's you know what it means to the rest of the country is something different than what actually happens there now. And even since then, there's all these great artists like you who've come back, and John is there. And I had friends that were always in that area. Bill Keith was a good friend of mine. All the great music that's right at your fingertips up there.
Yeah, it's really like, you know, earlier I mentioned it was such a great place to grow up, and you know, this town just attracted so many players that, you know, still here, you know, like John Sebastian, Happy Trom, Rory Block is only about an hour away, and of course, most of your listeners probably know, we just lost, you know, recently, Eric Weinberg, who's here, and before Eric, Bill Keith.
Right.
And it's just, you know, I feel very lucky to have seen them. I was here just, you know, playing once a week with Brian Hollander's Bluegrass Club Band,
yeah.
You know? That's how it kind of goes in this area here. And a lot of people don't associate living in New York State with hearing bluegrass.
No, they don't. There's so much of it. There's so much all over the state. I think there's a Northeast thing, and I'm getting sidetracked here, but I think with Berkeley and all the kids who go up there to learn bluegrass and they learn musical theory, and a lot of them stay in the Northeastern younger bands. And there's so much of it coming around now that it's, if you go Northeast at all, you're going to see all these incredibly talented musician skill, but then they have all this theory that they work with in their brain, and all this great music comes out. So I think it's reviving, and maybe it's, I used to call it the Berkeley effect, but that's getting old even for me to say.
I see music in many styles.
Yeah,
and it certainly is getting out there in the World Wide Web, and all the ways that are available to us now that weren't available long ago.
Cindy, the last, if you're just tuning in, Cindy Cash Dollar, we're talking about Waltz for Abilene on Silvershot, brand new album. There's so many great musicians, so much great music, so much great playing. The last cut features Larry Campbell, who, as we were discussing Ray Benson, we're going to talk a little bit, just briefly about the coronavirus and its effect on music, but Larry Campbell, you can update us on Larry, who's on your last cut of the album, which is Waltz for Abilene, the title cut.
Well, Larry's doing much better. It was looking very, very scary for a window. He was really felled by this horrible virus, and just seemed like his fever would not break. And I think they were, you know, talking ambulance, and then miraculously his fever finally broke. And so I just heard from him a few days ago, and he's doing much better. He's practicing, playing a little bit on his mandolin, but I think with anyone that gets this virus, I think it would take a long time for one's immune system to get back up, you know, and I know that's what Larry's doing right now, is just resting and just trying to get strong again.
The overall, and I want you to introduce the title cut, and then I'm going to let you go, but overall, we've been talking with musicians for the last 3-4 weeks about the impact of this virus on the music business and, of course, all the gigs and everything, but I kind of like to go week by week and get a perspective another week down the road as it has affected, let's say, Cindy Cash Dollar this time, if you can add anything to that, and then I want to catch the title cut song, I want you to introduce that, but you can talk a little bit about, we've talked about Ray Benson, the effect on him, and Larry, but what else can you bring us?
As far as people I know?
Well, no, I would just say, yeah, I mean, not so much that, it's just, you could do that if you want, but just the overall impact on the music business. There was a wall, all of a sudden there was a wall thrown up to venues, which then impacts all of the rest of the industry, and you can't get out and play, you don't record that much.
Oh, it's a tsunami for everybody. Obviously, no matter what business you're in, but in speaking of the music business, I think it's just been at a standstill from, you know, nobody can go out, so the venue's closed. And those people, all the waiters and waitresses and bartenders and sound people, staff, and, you know, they're out of work. The venue's shut down. People can't go anywhere. The musicians who, you know, all of us who had tours in place, who spent money perhaps on getting very good deals long ahead of time on ticket, you know, plane tickets overseas,
yeah,
for the entire band, for the crew. You know, you incur those expenses long before you actually get to those places. You know, it takes a long time, especially going overseas, to get all the proper paperwork in place. But even touring locally, and it's so hard to get the dates back because it's such a backlash effect of musicians' gigs get canceled. Now you have to rebook them. Well, if musicians are on tour, it makes it even harder because those venues are, everything's just scheduled around touring, and on it goes. But you know, the musicians, there's, you know, if you do have a pension or retirement of any kind, you're lucky. But like so many other people in other professions, we are one of many professions that live paycheck to paycheck,
yeah,
month to month. So this is, you know, and in the industry, the you know, I know here tour managers that are out of work, you know.
And it was also sudden.
Recording studio.
The effect on it was just like instant. It was like once it reached ahead, and all of a sudden it was within days, everything was shut down. Everything, all
it
of a sudden, everything
me,
stopped.
Like, to me, it was just, I just envisioned like setting up a huge row of dominoes on a big long driveway and just taking that little tap to knock them all down and watch them go down. And that's what this reminded me of. And then just hearing the effects, just like in little increments of, you know, my husband, Harvey Citron, is a luthier,
mm-hmm,
Citron guitars. And, you know, there is an example of someone who works from home. You know, he has a shop here and where he makes guitars and basses. Well, if musicians aren't touring,
they are buying.
Going to, right, they're not having him create a beautiful instrument for them, bringing repairs here for the musicians that are on tour and, you know, needing little tune-ups and repairs and, you know, the bus drivers. So it's, I mean, it's like,
oh,
the whole industry, and there's,
yeah,
you know, there's, it's like you wonder, is there an end in sight? And, you know, as a musician, are we ever going to get back to playing once the venues open their doors again? Are people going to go out and support live music?
That's,
it was,
yeah,
it's kind of bad enough at times when, you know, the internet's an incredible thing, but, you know, some people, you know, maybe when you could choose to stay home and didn't have to, you know, some people would just get music at home. You know, the live music industry is, you know, one that might have been suffering just a bit in some,
mm-hmm,
areas. But now I think it probably will suffer even more because how are you going to socially distance people in a club?
You can't.
You know, socially distance people touring in a tour bus
you
or
can't.
A van? Or
yeah, you can't do
tour.
It.
Yeah.
You can't. Do you miss, as a performer, do you miss performing in front of a live audience? There has to be. Do you get something from that? Sure, you're a musician and you're touring and you're being paid and you have merchandise and products and the CD. We'll talk about just a minute. But do you miss that feeling of being on stage and getting that response?
Oh, of course. I mean, it's what I've done for, you know, a good part of my life. And that's the part that really makes me sad is, amongst many things, is the reality of when and if everything gets back to a new normal. You know, what is it going to be like? Is there going to be large crowds? And, you know, will there be more studio work? Because I do both. And I'm lucky to have that kind of balance. But, you know, I wonder even the recording studios. I have been going into a studio to do overdubs for people. You know, that type of work hasn't stopped where people will send files and,
yeah,
you can overdub on them. But recording studios are a public place, too.
That's right.
So,
and they're not essential.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy. I hope it all comes. Yeah, we're hoping it all ends soon it's comparable to nothing that's ever happened it's not happened before like this. It's not happened like this. So the solutions are going to have to be original and creative, and people are just going to have to work themselves through it. And so I assume, Cindy, you have a Facebook. You probably have a website. where maybe people can find this album. And all the tour information is probably no longer current, if it's still up there.
I think May, I think June and, whatever was in formation is still there, although the May dates, they canceled.
Okay.
But yes, my website is CindyCashDollar.com, and people can go there and read all about it, and you can actually hear samples. I put sample tracks up on the homepage so everyone can hear, a bit of these different tracks. And for those that are players, I've got a tuning page and a gear page, and so I've tried to include everything there, and even my instructional download or DVDs of homespun tapes are there. And
homespun again, Woodstock.
Books, the band Evoke. So it's all there on CindyCashDollar.com.
Good.
And yes, I'm on Facebook. I have an artist and a personal page, Twitter, Instagram, all the usual platforms. Yes, I'm on there. And Walter Ramelin, the album is available on all the music platforms for streaming, download. You can even purchase the physical CD. And The Last Cut, you were talking about Larry.
Yeah, you're going to introduce that one. Mm-hmm.
So The Last Cut, title cut, I wrote when I was in Abilene, Texas. I was touring with Garrison Keillor and a Prairie Home Companion because, they would get out of the Fitzgerald Theater on occasion and tour. And so one of the stops was in Abilene, and I thought it was such a pretty, like a musical sounding name. And so I wanted to, Garrison often liked me when I appeared on the show as a musical guest with the band. I always liked to hear more of the faster, up-tempo swing style that I play on steel guitar. But I wanted to do something very, kind of pretty and quiet. And so I wrote the song. I had my dober with me also on the show, but I think we got into, we rehearsed it, did 30 seconds of that tune live, and then it cut to a Sweet Number Big commercial, as I recall. We never got to fulfill doing the song on there, but I had kept that song in my heart and mind all these years, and so wanted to record it on this album, and wanted fiddle and mandolin, and that's why Larry Campbell's on there. He's just an amazing musician and a very old friend. And so I just wanted a nice kind of bed of sound.
Yeah.
He's so good. He's so much fun to work with, and so wonderful, his musical ideas. So that's how that title cut ended up on there.
Well, we will. I'm going to let you go. Cindy Cashdollar, thanks so much. First time on Unreal Bluegrass. I appreciate it greatly. I've enjoyed it.
Lovely. And
I've enjoyed it.
I love the name of your show. That's great.
Gives me a little bit of room to move around for Unreal.
Love it.
Yeah. Listen, we're going to cut to the waltz rambling. I'll let you go, and hopefully everything will clear up, and we'll run into each other somewhere out on the road. And you doing what you do on stage, and me doing what I do in the audience is watching and appreciating.
Thank you so much
for
what you do, and
thank
I want to wish you and all the listeners and all your friends and family just the safest and healthiest well-being right now in what is a very challenging time. And thankfully, we have music, and thankfully you are bringing it all to us since at this time we're not able to go out. So thank you for all of that. I really appreciate it. It's been a lovely way to spend an afternoon here.
Thank you, Cindy.
Take care.
Oh, sure. I'll see you. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.